Memorial Day marks the symbolic start to summer and a grilling season, by the way. Barbecues are one of the more popular Memorial Day pastimes, and the numbers bear that out. Nearly 60% of Americans plan to grill out this holiday. It's according to the trade group Hearth, Patio, and Barbecue Association. Wisconsin Weekend has you covered on grilling tips on meat, fish, veggies, and let's throw on the dessert for good measure. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Our pit master here is Chef Brad Kahn. He is dining room manager at Madison College Food Services, overseeing the front of the house for food venues. He's also a graduate of the college's culinary program. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So what does grilling do to our food that's different than other cooking methods we like to use?
What does it do differently? Well, first of all, I think just the addition of smoke in any form, right? And I know that we're probably going to start immediately talking about, you know, charcoal versus gas, and I think they're both fine. Yeah, I have charcoal.
Just putting it out
just
there.
Saying, I like my Weber out in my backyard, and I enjoy using that. There were times when I thought, you know, I should just go get like a little gas grill too, just for the times that I want to like cook something really quick. But you know what? It takes about 10 minutes to start up the coals and then you're just ready to go. But either one of them, that beside the point, either one of them will give you, you know, that, you know, little charred, that charred flavor that you want. You got to remember that in a restaurant kitchen, almost all restaurant kitchens, unless they're really specialized, they have, you know, they have a gas charbroiler. So there's nothing wrong with gas either. But it just adds that little extra, yeah, that open flame. It's indescribable. I mean, and it's not indescribable. Everybody knows it. It's
so lump just, charcoal is your thing.
It is my thing, and I understand. You know, here's what it comes down to is that if you work in a professional kitchen, you become accustomed to that amount of heat. And your home range, whether you are on electric or gas or whatever, you just can't get that. It's not even legal to have that kind of that kind of heat. And so when I, you know, fire up the lump charcoal, which absolutely gets hotter, and there's nothing wrong with, again, nothing wrong with briquettes. They last longer. They are very reliable, and you know, understand. You know, you get this many will give you this much heat and whatever, and you know how to
very
use
prescribed.
Them. It's very prescribed, and so I think that, you know, but with lump charcoal, boy, the first time I ever fired that up, and I was like, man, this is hot, and it just and it just gives you that heat. Now, if you're not comfortable with that, then maybe you're not comfortable with that. Maybe you work your you work your way up.
You
I
work
suppose.
Your way up to it. So I'm gonna be rolling out that grill. What do we need to do to make sure the grill is ready for this great cookout we're having this weekend?
I've been using my grill since like February. It's funny because they always say, oh, it's time to roll out the grill. And I'm like, I never really put mine away. If there's not, you know, a foot of snow in my backyard, I'm rolling it away. I'm getting out there. But, you know, you want to make sure, obviously, that it's clean and not rusty. I think I tend to have like some, you know, visitors in my backyard that like to live in parts of my grill whenever I open it up for the first. If it's been a couple of months, I will open it up and find, you know, maybe a nest sitting on top of the cover, you know, never inside, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But on the top, I'll find a nest. And so you just, you know, you want to clean everything up. To the point where you just get a good hot fire going in there and that'll pretty much take care of everything. Get a grill brush, make sure you get a grill brush that doesn't, you know, shed the little, you got to spend some money on a grill brush, mm-hmm. or you can get one that's just like sort of it's a wire mesh rather than just the bristles.
Okay.
Because if the bristles come off, you can't see them, and that's the last thing you want in your food.
So as far as accessories go, good brush. What about tongs? Anything else that you really love?
I you know what I love? I love like the sets that you that come in like the metal briefcases that look like they should have, you know, it's hilarious.
I love it,
because grilling is fun, barbecue is fun, and you need to have fun in it. But I love those sets because it like sort of implies that you just put all this stuff away and you only use it when you're, you know, I mean, And the thing is that everything that I would use on the grill, I already use in my kitchen, right? A pair of tongs. I have, you know, a spatula that I like. Even the ones that, you know, in the briefcases, they're longer and they're harder to deal with. They're just kind of hard to deal with because they're longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I sort of don't like them. I like what I use in my kitchen on a regular basis, what I'm used to. There's if you want for more delicate stuff, there's a particular kind of metal spatula called a fish turner,
mm-hmm.
Which is kind of angled and it's got grooves and it's open and it's really thin. And if for finer work, you can use that kind of a thing.
You also keep a couple bricks nearby?
I do. I have a couple of bricks underneath that I have wrapped in foil. Now, I can use that as like, because I will take here. Okay. Fun word: spatchcocking a chicken,
uh-huh.
which is to take the backbone out of it and lay it open. It's butterfly chicken, but and if you lay a couple of hot bricks on it, or even if they're not hot. I mean, just
yeah.
the weight down,
yeah.
and you can cook a whole chicken in 45 minutes with like that, and then it presses them down so you get more of an even it's like even thickness.
So I wrap those bricks
are wrapped in foil just
uh-huh.
because it's probably
so
a good
nice
idea to wrap
them
in foil and nice weight. And then the other thing I will do with them, if I'm building like a two zone fire, which I almost always do, which is the hot side on one side and nothing underneath on the other side, I sometimes take those two bricks and lay them end to end on next to each other, and then I have a separation between them.
Oh,
really,
so you
really
kind
hot.
Of zone
yeah,
your
yeah, yeah.
Grill.
So that's like really, really separating. And then I can build up the coals on this side, add some wood if I want, and then that stays hot over there, and then the cold stays over on the cold side. Cold is relative, obviously, but that's what I use the bricks for. Other than that, the other stuff that I have is all stuff that I just have in my kitchen. A chimney starter, because it's really, really easy. A couple of wads of newspaper up in there. I know a lot of people have a newspaper. It's like, people are like, but I don't get the newspaper. What do I use? Oh boy. Okay. Well, you're gonna find something. So there's that, and then I have a few other things. You get an oil rag, and you instead of, because you can't really spray, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everybody, don't do that. No spraying your pan spray on your grill grate when you're, right? You can't do that. I've seen people get in trouble doing that. But you can take a rag and you can dip it in oil, and then you take your tongs and you rub it along the grates, and that's how you will season your grill when you start, and just make sure it's hot.
We're hungry.
We
want to put something on this grill. Enough with all this preparation.
Yeah.
What are we going to start with?
Oh, boy. Well, when people ask me, and we've been talking, barbecue, and once you've exhausted yourself of brats and burgers, which I don't know if that's even possible, but once you've exhausted
you
yourself
are in Wisconsin.
Of brats and burgers and dogs and all that stuff, and you want to cook like a big piece of meat, I think the first thing to go for is a pork shoulder, simply because it's just, yes, you can mess it up, but it's pretty forgiving. It's got a lot of nice connective tissue that's going to be really nice and falling apart, whatever you want to smoke. It'll take smoke really well. It will, you can overcook it, but it takes a while, right? As opposed to something like a brisket, which is, you got to make sure that it's just right. Pork shoulder is a lot more forgiving.
So you're putting it intact on the grill.
You can put a pork, yeah.
Or
yeah,
are
yeah.
you
yeah.
dividing?
Well,
and
you
conquering.
Can do either. You
okay.
can do either if you don't want to deal with one big gigantic, right? Because some of them obviously can get pretty big. A brisket can go 16 pounds, and a pork shoulder certainly can be the same. So you can cut that into whatever chunks you want. Yeah, absolutely. And then you just sort of just let it go, like I said, on the cool side. If you know how to control the temperature, if we're talking a gas grill, you can turn it up and down pretty easily. If you're talking a charcoal grill, you deal with the dampers and you open and close and you just sort of figure out what the temperature, because you want it to be a nice low temperature, and you let it go for a while.
Do you put any rub on it?
I do.
Okay.
And I think dry rubs are, I love them. It's kind of the way to go. There are lots of recipes online and lots of people have them. This is my special whatever, but I have a tendency to... if it starts with brown sugar, and remember, you can do sugar, right? Because mm-hmm. you're not doing it over direct heat, and the brown sugar would burn otherwise if you're the direct heat. But if you're barbecuing and it's, you know, low and slow, then the sugar's not going to burn. It's okay. going to get you that nice crusty bark that everybody loves.
Yeah.
Burn ends, right? You said burn ends. Did you?
We're exactly. with Chef Brad Kahn fielding your questions. He is dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, talking barbecuing on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, 800-642-1234. What do you love to throw on the grill? Have you learned any tricks through trial and error? Do you have your bricks and foil? Something we like to talk less about, cleaning the grill. How do you go about doing it? Whose job is it? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll get right back to the grill after this latest news here on the Ideas Network. The USDA is tweeting about food safety on the grill. Remember to clean, separate, cook, and chill this weekend. Chill in other ways as well. We're breaking it all down, rolling the grill out, grabbing the charcoal. Maybe there's some in the garage, maybe not. And we're getting down to business, discussing grilling techniques on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Chef Brad Kahn stays with us. He is dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, running the front of the house for food venues. He's also a graduate of the college's culinary program. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. What do you want to know from Chef Brad, who is the pitmaster in your household, and how did they claim that status? What is your favorite recipe that you will break out this weekend? Call in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Brad, we were talking about that pork shoulder and the rub when we left off for the news. How long do we keep that on the grill, or when do we know it's done?
Well, you know, as far as, like, you know, things that you really want to have in terms of, like, equipment, you know, a stick thermometer, a meat thermometer, probe thermometer, that's, you know, and the USDA is going to like me for that, because that's what you need to make sure that you get to certain temperatures. Remembering, of course, that the USDA wants you to cook to a certain temperature to get rid of harmful pathogens, but at the same time, sometimes that's a little more than, should I say that? I don't even know. You know, whatever. A rare piece of meat is not going to be where they want it to be, but that's, you know, I guess your personal preference. But if you have a stick thermometer, then you don't have to sit there and try to cut open the piece of meat and make sure that it's right, and you lose all the juices and all that stuff. Not all of them, but enough
Some of them. Right.
Some of them. You don't want to do that if you don't have to. So a stick thermometer, pretty easy to find these days, and, you know, I kind of rely on mine for things like big roasts or pork shoulders, whatever, where you want to get it to the temperature. You can't really tell. I had years ago I was cooking at a friend's house, and I was checking the chicken breasts to see if they were done, and he came out and said, "Why are you touching all the chicken breasts?" And I said, "I'm checking to see if they're done." He said, "Why are you touching all?" I said, "Because that's how I know." He said, "How do you know that?" And I said, "Because I've cooked a few thousand of them, and I know what they feel like when they're done. So a steak, or, you know, whatever, you can tell, right? You can tell. You touch it, and you know, you know how done it is. But with like a roast, you know, it's hard to know, and you want to get it to a temperature where the collagen and the connective tissue in the meats are starting to, you know, sort of just really get to that gelatinous, right? Because the collagen with the heat will turn into gelatin, and that's what you're looking for, and that's the mouthfeel you're looking for. And that's about 203 degrees, I believe, or something like that. So that's where you want to get that. So you can't really know that unless you have that thermometer. So that's very important to have. And so anyway, that ends up being on the grill for probably, you know, 4 or 5 hours sometimes.
Okay, so there are going to be tons of burgers on the grill.
Yes, of course.
Regardless.
Yes.
So how can we make the best burger?
I think that you kind of have to forget about the whole really, really lean ground beef thing. I mean, 80-20 mix of fat to meat. You can't, you know, once you start getting into 85 or 90% lean or 95, you know, it gets a little dry. Mm-hmm. It's no matter what you do, it's going to be dry. You can leave it as rare as can be, which you shouldn't do, people, because it's ground beef. But you need to cook that to 160 internal. you need to have enough fat, really, to make a burger decent.
What about the flame?
That's direct flame. That's nice and hot. Mm-hmm. Or, of course, the other thing that people are doing now is they're starting it in a, you know, they're starting it on the cool side. And at the end, right, or you start it right, because that used to be the thought that you'd start it hot, you'd sear it on both sides, and then you'd finish it on the lower part of the grill. But I have a tendency to do the opposite. I will set it on the low side and get it up to a certain temperature, and then I get it and the last few seconds on either side to get a nice sear on the outside, the nice crustiness. Because, you know, the searing doesn't actually seal in the juices. There, you really can't do something like that. But if you cook it properly, it'll be nice and juicy.
Do you like to throw on your cheese at the last second?
At the last second? Yeah. Just the end. Cover it a little bit. Let them go. It won't take long. You know, that again, that's another reason to have a two-sided fire. You can't just build, you know, 4 inches of coals the whole way across the thing, or fire up all of your grill. You got to have some room somewhere to let it, you know, chill out, which is one of the nice things about a gas grill, is that you've got that shelf usually on the top that you can, you know, get everything in case it starts going nuts and then the flames and whatever, or too hot, you can rescue your food a little bit. You got to have a place to land. Okay. Got to have a landing space. Got to have a landing space.
So, you know, we also love a good steak on the grill, great searing. Mm-hmm. How do you make that beautiful steak?
Again, same thing. You know, that's why cooks like that hot, that really hot flame, because you got that really nice sear. You can do the same thing. Again, that's the school of thought these days, is to start it, you know, lower and then finish it. And of course, a lot of people are using, you know, sous vide. You know, I haven't taken the dive yet. I haven't bought one of those things yet.
Wait, the what?
The sous vide machines, which is to say you take the meat and you put it in a bag and you season it, and then you put it in the water.
Right.
And then you've got that little, it's a little unit that heats the water to exactly the temperature, right? Because if you want a medium rare steak and you want to heat that piece of meat to 130 degrees, now it'll never get above, right? And it'll be gray and awful on the outside.
I don't picture you as a gadget guy.
I can't bring myself to, my wife will always say, what do you need that for? I'm like, I don't need that. She goes, you know how to cook a steak already. Yes, I do. But it really, it does help a lot of people for, you know, you can get a lot of nice flavor in it. It's right at that right temperature, and it stays at 130, and then a couple of minutes on the flame on either side, and it's done and it's perfect. And it's, you know, perfectly where you want it in terms of like medium or medium rare or wherever you want it. But, you know, but again, grilling and barbecue, it's fun. So if you like those gadgets, by all means.
So what about those hot dogs? Because they're pre-cooked, and it seems like, bam, they could be done in a minute.
Sure. Again, low side,
low.
You know, because I can't, right? And I have an 8-year-old at home, and whenever all the kids are there in the neighborhood or whatever, you start burning those. And they're not eating them. They're just not, I'll have a hamburger instead. They don't, right? So you just have to be gentle with them. Yes, they're already pre-cooked. You just want to warm them up, but you want to get a little bit of, you know, want to get a little bit of fire on them to get a little bit of that charred, right? Otherwise, you might as well just throw them in some boiling water. That's no fun.
My chicken breast gets so dry on the grill. Am I doing wrong?
Chicken breasts are, you know, they're very lean and they're very easily brought from perfect to not very easily. It's why a lot of people have given up on chicken breasts and they've used chicken thighs now, because chicken thighs have more fat and they're a lot more forgiving, and you can do things on chicken thighs, you know, as far as like going from grilling to barbecuing, you know, if you were going to make that distinction, and low and slow and sort of right, that you can do with chicken thighs that you can't really do with chicken breasts. You know, the other thing about chicken breasts, remember, going back to the brick, they're odd shaped. So one end is going to be right and overdone on one side and not done in the middle of the other side. And the last thing you want to do is bite into a not quite done chicken breast.
Right.
Because that's kind of gross. And so if you flatten them out a little bit, that'll help. You can either flatten them out beforehand with a mallet or the side of a frying pan or whatever. But you want to get them, again, you know, stick thermometer will help you get them exactly to about 160, which is going to be where they're nice and juicy, and make a few thousand of them, and you'll know how they feel to get them done. But the chicken thighs are, I love them. I think they're just more flavorful, and they take a lot of marinades really well and dry rubs, and you can make all kinds of great things with
chicken
thighs.
How long do you marinate? Do you, generally speaking, how long do you
marinate? Generally speaking, yeah. I'll try to get something in the night before if I'm thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But of course, that's sort of what I do. I think, you know, I understand that not everybody thinks about those kind of things. They've got other things going on, other things that they're interested in, and I get that. You know, I have a tendency to finish dinner and go, okay, what am I making tomorrow? And so I start thinking, and I don't always act on that, but I start thinking about it. And so if I want to get a marinade going, you do the night before will usually be a good way to go about doing that, something like that. So
what is your favorite marinade?
These days I like to do it's Chinese barbecue. It's called char siu.
Mm-hmm.
Char siu is traditionally made with, you know, pork. You can use pork belly. You can do like country style boneless ribs that are just lovely.
Ooh, yeah.
Lovely piece. Again, you know, sort of needs to be cooked a little lower and slower. But there's just, is this enough fat to keep it? And then it's a marinade. Again, a million recipes on the air, on the web.
Online,
and you can find, you know, whatever. And so it's a marinade that does have a lot of sort of sweetened or sugar or honey or I've been using sorghum a lot lately, sorghum syrup.
Oh,
just
really?
Because it's just an interesting, it's a little less sweet than something like honey. It's less sweet than maple syrup, and it's just sort of, you know, it's sort of an interesting sort of authentic kind of flavor that I like. So I use that, and then you get that on the low, like I said, low and slow, and then over the heat last minute to get it really charred on the bits, and it works great with chicken thighs. It works great with a pork like that, but you got to have some fat.
You keep going back
to the fat. You gotta have the fat.
Yes. Yeah. Talking with Chef Brad Kahn. He's our guide. He's dining room manager over at Madison College Food Services. Gathering your thoughts on grilling as well. 800-642-1234. What do you love to grill? How often do you grill? Have you learned any tricks through trial and error? And have you smoked meat before? Did you get the outcome you had hoped for? Do you slow cook barbecue until it falls off the bone, or are you more into hot dogs and hamburgers? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're moving on into the fish category.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I know. Fish can get very finicky on the grill.
Very quickly. Yeah, talk about chicken breasts.
This is the
fish
delicate
is even
part of the conversation.
Very, very delicate part of the conversation. And you want to make sure that your grill is clean enough so that you will not have fish sticking to the right.
I was just going to say, fish are expensive. Fish is expensive.
Yes.
Fish is intimidating,
yes.
And things can go wrong very quickly.
Keep the skin on if you can, because that will protect your fish. Make sure you're not getting too ripping hot, because that will make it bad really quickly. And go with the fatty, you know, salmon is always the way to go first, because it's fattier and it will be a little more forgiving. The more, you know, we're always, right, for this whole hour, we're talking about fat, aren't we?
And forgiving.
And so that's what you, deal with. You got to try to get something with some fat in it, which will help you. And help your results. Yes.
Marinating that fish.
You can't do that overnight, because mm-hmm. it's a delicate flesh. It'll just sort of, what you'll end up doing is you'll cure your fish instead of, you know, marinating it. And then you're going to get it with a slightly different product, which is not necessarily bad. But you have to maybe do that for a couple of hours instead of like overnight or something like that.
What about foil?
Foils can be your friend without question. That's, you know, foil or a lot of people use cedar planks.
Oh,
like
yeah, right.
Soaked cedar planks,
uh-huh.
Right? I've done that. It's lovely. It's a nice little nice flavor.
Yeah.
And you know, if you put, and you can't put that over direct heat, because you can, but your cedar plank will start burning up.
I mean, you soak it
beforehand, but it's but that's a nice way to do it. But fish is, you know, wonderful on the grill. Obviously wonderful on the grill.
Let's bring in Tim now, joining us from Madison. Tim, hi.
Morning. How you doing?
Doing well. So what's on your mind in grilling?
Oh, I love food, and I love to cook, and I love to grill, and I'm kind of with you on the chicken. And it always seems to be kind of dry, and I really like to use chicken that has a bone in. But what's the best way to start it? Is it better to start it direct and hot and get some char on it right away, or is it better to start it a little slower and lower and then finish it later with a little better color?
Bone-in, absolutely a much better way to go. And the bone, as well as the skin, like on the fish, will help protect your piece of meat. So, I like to start it lower. I like to start a little lower and then move up to the hot side. I just think that as in terms of just making sure that you don't, you know, because the outside part of the meat can be way overdone, and then the center, right, if you're too hot. So I like to get it nice and up to temp. You know, they always talk about taking your meat and getting it out of the fridge and bringing it to room temperature. That takes a while. And so another way to bring it up to a nice temperature to get it even is to put it on the cooler part of the grill and get it warm that way to the point where it's almost done, and then you can move it over to the hot side, and that'll give the skin a chance to render a little bit and render out and get a little crispy if you can.
Tim,
get that going.
Tim, what's on your grill this weekend?
I don't know yet. I'm usually like your guest here. I'm usually planning days ahead because I always like to know what's going to happen. But we always host all the events at our house, and this weekend we didn't plan one, so. We're kind of leaving it open, so I'm sure something will happen.
What about that pork shoulder that we were talking about earlier?
Yeah, that sounds real good. We just did one of those about a week ago.
Okay.
So it's already, I can't do that one yet.
All right. Well, good luck in coming up with a plan there, Tim. Got to have a plan. Let's, you know, there are some people, I'm not going to name names here. They're notorious for checking the progress of the food on the grill. So taking that lid off, moving
yes.
meat around,
yes.
a little bit of the type A
yes.
going
I know,
on there.
I know,
so what,
I know.
What?
Well, you know, you lose heat in your grill when you do that.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back relatively quickly. But it's the same concept as like checking your Thanksgiving turkey, and or when they say, you know, we'll open it up and baste it every 20 minutes. Now you're losing all the heat in your right. It takes longer for your oven to recover, but so the grill recovers pretty quickly. So you can get away with it a little bit, but I have a tendency to just sort of let it go. I figure it's doing well. Again, if you have the thermometer that's like in, so I have the thermometer for the meat, and then I also have like another one of the like a probe thermometer that's like on the wire that connects to the unit, and I usually just stick that into the top of the grill, the cover,
uh-huh.
and then I know what the temperature of the inside, and I'm like, okay, we're good, it's good to go, and so I just leave it. I let
so
it go.
You really do like your thermometers. I mean, that,
yeah,
that
it's,
really.
It's to know. I mean, and even more so. I mean, you know, I don't need to keep monitoring constantly what is the temperature internal of the roast, but I do like to know what the temperature of the grill is, because then you again you can adjust that with the dampers opening and closing a little bit. Really, just a little bit of a difference will make a huge difference in the temperature, and then you get that helps a lot, especially with barbecue, obviously.
The grilling gurus at the trade group Hearth Patio and Barbecue Association have us covered on the factoid front here. The top choices for grilling this weekend will be burgers out in front, followed by steak and hot dogs in close succession. Chicken is rounding out the pack. We're learning how to be our best selves around the grill in this edition of Wisconsin Weekend, and Chef Brad Kahn is our guide. He's dining room manager over at Madison College Food Services. Your grilling tips and questions as well, they're welcome. 800-642-1234. Why don't you brainstorm with Chef Brad? And what do you love to throw on the grill? What are you concerned about? Have you learned the hard way on a particular meat or fish? School us. 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. Memorial Day not only ushers in the unofficial start of summer, but peak hot dog eating season. The National Hot Dog and Sausage Council says that starting on Memorial Day, we'll eat, get this, 818 dogs per second. That's just a few wieners short of 71 million in a day. We've got the grill going on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, Brad Kahn is our pit master. He's chef over at dining room manager over at Madison College Food Services. You can join in 800-642-1234. What's your favorite cut of meat to grill? Have you tried your hand at smoking meat? How did that turn out? Do you prefer gas or charcoal? Let's discuss. 800-642-1234. So Joe from Washburn couldn't stay with us. He's vegetarian, called and wants to know, what are your grilling tips for us vegetarians?
So here's what, when you talk about like grilling, tchotchkes to have and all the different like things that you can buy, I see the little sort of like the woks, those, right, that have the holes in them so you can grill. And I always think to myself, why are you cutting up your vegetables before you grill them? Why don't you leave them large, right? So that's when I'm cooking vegetables, and I do that a lot, I will cut them into large planks, grill them like they're steaks, essentially.
Even with like the stem of the broccoli.
You could leave it large, right? I mean, maybe not the whole. I'll cut it, or if I take like a head, like cauliflower, cut that into quarters.
Okay.
Again, salt and pepper, a little olive oil, and that's really all you need. And then on the grill, and then they're low side, hot side, get a little char, whatever. Asparagus is beautiful.
Brussels sprouts. Yeah, I love Brussels sprouts.
It's like the only way, right?
Fabulous.
No, I love Brussels sprouts, but I'll eat them, right? Asparagus, I almost don't even like any other way than just like on the grill. And again, if you lay them, perpendicular to your grill grates, they're not going anywhere. And you just sort of, you move them around a little bit. And again, salt, pepper, olive oil, and they're perfect. A little squeeze of lemon at the end. Mm. But any of that stuff. I mean, zucchini, cut it into planks. Eggplant, planks, cut it up into chunks afterwards. You got plenty of flavor on them, and they're really good. And then mushrooms, portobello mushrooms, people love that, right?
Yeah, Well, Barb from Beaver Dam called in to ask if you could discuss the differences between big green egg, charcoal grills, gas grills. She's in the market for a new grill, doesn't really know where to start.
Yeah, there's a lot of places, and a lot of money that you can spend.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people who have Big Green Egg and they love it. I think that it's the kind of thing that it's sort of to the point where you sort of need to learn how to use it a little differently. For me, the Weber grill that I basically grew up with. In fact, the Weber grill that I grew up with, I had in my backyard until it sort of fell apart a couple years ago. And I got a new Weber grill just because that's what I know and it's what I'm used to. Big Green Egg or any of those really high-end, gas grills, pellet grills, those kind of things. I know people who use them and love them all. The question is whether it's the kind of thing you're going to have to learn how to use. It's going to take you a while to learn how to use it differently. If you want to do that, absolutely. But I've never heard anybody say that thing's awful. I hate it.
Okay.
And you can spend a lot of money, but why not? Again, it's fun. It's fun to be outside cooking. So I can't complain about that.
Okay. So one other food group I want to make sure we get some minutes on here. When we lived in Louisiana, we would take the peaches right off the tree, cut the peaches up, put them right on the grill.
Yeah.
What about fruits on the grill?
Stone fruits.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I know. Pineapples.
Yeah.
Right. I know. It's delicious. And a little brush of some sort of neutral oil, and on the grill, and a few nice grill marks on it is really all you need for any of that stuff. You don't want to go too
really
long.
Really quick.
Really quick, really hot will just get you a nice, right, caramelize some of the sugars, and you'll have a nice, right, with some ice cream, right, homemade ice cream. Make your own ice cream,
man.
People.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of good ice cream you can buy around here. So, it's just, it's delicious. Stone fruit especially is, that's the way to go. I've never tried things like an apple. But any kind of food that you can get on the grill is going to add some nice flavor. It's going to be an interesting little different flavor component going on there.
Okay, let's talk about quantity in grilling, because as you were talking in the break, you do a whole lot of quantity at once, and then you can use it later.
Well, if you have like a six, you're talking about cuts of meat earlier, and something like a flank steak, which can be, you can buy a 5-6 pound flank steak, right? And flank is one of those cuts that's really delicious and has gotten more expensive because people are figuring out how delicious it is. But then you have all that meat left over, or you know, you have big roasts and you don't know what to do. I have a tendency to fire up the grill and make a lot of things. I'll go looking in my freezer or in my fridge for other things that I can throw on the grill. A couple of days ago, I was doing some beef, and then I also decided to throw a bag of mushrooms that I had. I had a little container, a carton of mushrooms. And I put those, again, a little olive oil and salt and pepper, and I
right
put them
in
on
the grill.
Grill.
No,
I
no
was
foil.
Smoking, and I was smoking
or,
that.
Okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
They're big enough. You put them right
sure.
on the grill.
Yep.
And I was smoking this particular piece of meat, so I thought, actually, it was ribs what I was doing. That's what I was doing. I'm trying to remember what I was doing. I was doing some pork ribs. And I was going to smoke them, so I thought I would put the mushrooms on there, too. So now, in my fridge, I've got smoked mushrooms. If I'm doing a big piece of beef and I have leftover beef, which we always do because there's only three of us in my family, we will take the rest of the meat, cut it into, you know, 1 pound portions, put them in some plastic containers, put them in the freezer, you know, and then later on in the week I have, you know, if I'm making a stir fry, for instance, now I've got grilled beef that's
yep.
already ready to go, and I can just put that in with the rest of the stuff when I'm making a stir fry, and I've got good flavor, right? I don't know what I'm going to do with those smoked mushrooms, but I'll do something with them, and they'll put them in something, and they'll be really delicious because they'll have a little extra flavor from being smoked or being on the grill.
So as we wrap up here, and I hate to wrap up because this has been so much fun, but I have to ask, you know, now that, let's say we're done with our grilling and everything's done, party's over, the weekend's over, how should we best store our grill, making sure it's good to go for the next time?
Well, I think if you leave the heat on for a while and burn off anything, right, you don't really need to go at your grill with, like, you know, cleaners I just don't find that to be necessary. I think if you get it a good scrape, right, and even if you don't have a scraper, you take your tongs, wad up a piece of aluminum foil, and you can scrape your grill grate that way. That's easy enough.
Okay.
A bleach bucket is always a nice thing. A sandy bucket, you need a little bucket with water, right, bleach and water, 50 parts per million. Okay, so that is like a capful of bleach, like less than a capful of bleach in your little bucket of water is enough to kill any germs that you might have. Wipe down with that. It's not soap, so it won't clean grease, but it will sanitize. That's a nice thing to have. You don't need a lot of bleach to make it sanitary and ready for you to go next time.
This has been such a blast. Thank you so much for coming in.
Happy to be here.
Chef Brad Kahn is dining room manager of Madison College Food Services, overseeing the front of the house for food venues, graduate of the college's culinary program. We've been talking barbecue. Now it is time for Wisconsin Life. If you're grilling in a park or taking to the trails this weekend, you might find a particular word that describes your hiking experience. Here is Steve Gotcher.
If you've ever gone for a walk in the woods, it's likely you found a nice, long, slender branch along the path to use as a walking stick. Chances are you left your stick by the side of the trail when your hike was finished. But there are those who like to collect walking sticks, and there's a name for people like that. Bill Leaders explains.
Not long ago, I learned a word that has long described me, ribologist. It means a collector of walking sticks. I've been collecting walking sticks for 40 years, since I was a teenager. I found my first keeper near Minocqua while on vacation with my family. I don't know what became of that stick. I'm good at finding raw material. While hiking, I'll test candidates by smacking them into trees. The ones worth keeping are the ones that don't break. I look for other qualities, a fortuitous gnarl, a perfect handhold near the top, a pleasing sense of balance. No one makes a walking stick. Sure, you can cut it to length, remove the bark, sand it down, apply some stain and a few coats of finish. I prefer shellac. But all of its strength and beauty is already there. The knots and curves and insect canals that give a stick its character were all there before you came along. As a ribologist, I have come to appreciate the qualities of certain woods. Oak is tough and grainy. Ironwood, even more so. Maple has soft curves and lovely hues. Tag alder is super light but surprisingly strong. Hickory often has bark that just falls away, leaving a network of canals. I even have a few walking sticks I found as driftwood, sculpted by Lake Superior. Black ash, my latest passion, has chalky bark that sands down to different levels, creating a beautiful mosaic of colors: brown, tan, green, white. I have black ash sticks that still present shades of green more than a year after they were first exposed to light. Over the decades, I've given away dozens of sticks to friends, co-workers, people I admire. I have never sold one. I'll choose a stick that matches some quality I see in the person. Like, I'll give maple to people who teach, because that's what school desks are made of. Quirky people may get a twisty stick, strong people a hefty one. At home, I have a display case for walking sticks that I made from walking sticks, pieces of ironwood held together with leg screws. It has three compartments. One is for sticks gathered on a few acres my wife and I own in Richland County, mainly ironwood, oak, and maple. Another holds sticks from other places, a stalk of sumac from John Muir's boyhood farm in Marquette County, a thick chunk of manzanita from California, mailed home to Wisconsin in a crooked makeshift box, a shaft of pine from a four-day, 50-mile hike I took through Pictured Rocks National Seashore, minus several inches that were worn away as I trudged through the mud. The third compartment is for sticks I plan to give away. Though I read often about trees, my main source of rabbological knowledge is my own experience. It nonetheless guides me to some firm opinions. A walking stick should be at least as tall as its person's nose, the thinner end on top. It should have perfect balance, swinging into place on every other stride. The handhold should be pronounced, a gnarl or twist that invites the fingers to remain. It should be sanded smooth. Most of all, it should be beautiful. But that's the easy part. That's the way it was found.
Bill Leaders, a longtime Wisconsin journalist, is managing editor of The Progressive magazine, based in Madison, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And this edition of Wisconsin Weekend was produced by Keely Baltina and Colleen Leahy. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Keep on hiking and grilling with the Ideas Network.